Hello, I'm Michelle Hanratty. Thank you for listening to Sound Optometry. Just a reminder that you will no longer receive a CPD point by listening to this episode of the podcast. But if you subscribe and listen to the most recent episodes of Sound Optometry, you can gain CPD points. I hope you enjoy this episode of Sound Optometry. Hello, welcome to Sound Optometry, the podcast from Docket that provides high-quality, continuing professional development for all UK registered optometrists. You can gain one CPD point by listening to this podcast and completing the exercise on our website, docket.info. I'm Michelle Hanratty. I'm an IP optometrist based in Birmingham and an examiner for the college's scheme for registration. With case studies and in-depth conversations, each month we'll explore the topics that matter the most to us optometrists. This is the first of two episodes on enhanced optometric services across the four UK nations. And we will hear how these enhanced eye care pathways are of benefit to patients, practitioners, and the NHS. Today, we'll be exploring the services in Wales and in England. To do this, I'll be speaking to Kevin Liu, an IP optometrist in the northwest of England, and he's also an assessor and examiner for the College of Optometrists.
I believe that if, as a workforce, we get skilled up, it puts us in a better position. And I'm hoping that that helps the eye hospital to see the patients that need their care.
But first, Wales. To understand the system from a patient's perspective, one of our producers, Dr. Hilary Guite, spoke to the mother of a girl called Fionn, who had an acute eye problem and used the Wales Enhanced Eye Care Services.
My name's Ruth. I live in Cardiff in South Wales, and I had the privilege of accessing the emergency eye care service at my local optometrist when my six-year-old daughter had a leaf stuck in her eye.
So take me back to the start. How did Fionn get something in her eye?
Yeah, of course. Well, the school rang, or more specifically, the school nurse rang. And what seems to have happened very innocently was it was playtime. It was autumn. Leaves were falling off the tree, very small ones in this particular instance. She was in the playground. She was looking up around her, and it quite literally fell into her eye, a very small leaf.
And then what happened?
So I got the call following quite a few attempts by the nurse and the school to do a rinse out of some description, or an attempt to remove the foreign body themselves, you know, using first aid measures. But it seemed extremely stubborn and wasn't going anywhere. And I had the phone call to pick her up.
So she got this leaf in her eye. What sort of state was she in? What symptoms did she have?
To be fair, like absolutely nothing. So fortunately, she didn't have any redness. And if it wasn't for the fact it was a foreign body in her eye, and the eye being sort of so precious and you just wouldn't leave it there, it wasn't doing anything.
So what happened when you came to collect her from school?
Well, prior to collecting her, I had actually rang Pearson Blackmore, Fionn's patient there. But had she not been a patient there, you can just go into an optometrist to get support in this way. So yeah, so I picked her up and off we went to the appointment.
A lot of people might have thought, well, I need to go to casualty, or I need to go to my GP. What made you think to go to your optometrist?
I was really, really fortunate that the school nurse suggested it. And if I'm completely honest, I don't think that would have been my first thought, because the assumption could have been they'd be full, or, oh, we're not going to get an appointment there and I need to get this sorted now. But I was actually told at the time that appointment slots are kept free for exactly this type of reason.
So when you got there, what happened?
Well, we were taken straight into the practice and the consultation room. And thankfully, my daughter had been examined for a checkup not that much longer before by Claire. So she'd been to the practice. It wasn't unnerving. It wasn't a new environment. And I think I was really relieved by that, actually. So it was interesting. We touched on why didn't we go to A&E, or what would have happened if we'd gone to A&E. And I think that would have actually been a particularly more terrifying experience that might have meant the foreign body couldn't have come out of the eye as easily. So into the consultation room we went, and Claire kindly sat my daughter down to take a look. And I think what struck me most was Claire's confidence. There didn't seem to be any question that that was coming out of her eye. As a parent, that's sort of hugely reassuring.
Would you recommend the system to other people rather than going to GP or A&E?
Yeah, absolutely. I think for me, the system really highlighted the power of a specialist in this emergency situation. And just to know we were in such experienced hands was really reassuring, particularly for a child, a familiar environment. And sadly, I think A&E has such connotations of sort of sirens and upset and terror, but that's not the case with an optometrist. It's somewhere that my child has gone as routine or enjoyed. They remember the sticker. It's a very different experience.
So overall, you were really pleased with how it all turned out?
Absolutely, yeah, and extremely grateful. I think the other thing as well in Wales is I didn't pay a single penny for it either. And that is just a complete and utter privilege for such expertise.
It was covered on the NHS.
Yeah, absolutely. There was not a single charge, apart from a soft toy in the chemist next door, actually. that was what it cost me afterwards.
Well, Ruth, thanks very much for sharing your experience.
You're very welcome.
In that interview, you will have heard Ruth talking about someone called Claire. Claire Pearce is Fionn's optometrist and also a College Council member for Wales at the College of Optometrists. Hello, Claire. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Claire, Ruth's experience was overwhelmingly positive. How often do you provide services like this under the Wales Eye Care Service?
I would say most of my clinic days, I would provide some level of examinations under the Welsh Eye Care Service, which we commonly know as WECS. They're not all removing foreign bodies in Fionn's case, but they're all covered generally by the Welsh Eye Care Service, yep.
And is this service quite widely available in Wales?
Yeah, the majority of optometrists in Wales are accredited to give these examinations. So I would say every area in Wales would have an optometrist that would be available to give these services.
So it's different to a normal eye examination, isn't it?
Yeah, that's correct. Patients can go with a specific eye problem. It's generally emergency eye problems, and it means that the patient can be seen by an optometrist with the accreditation and that specific problem to be dealt with, rather than it being the traditional eye exam.
So what conditions does this service cover?
It would cover acute changes of vision. So a classic example of that would be onset of flashing lights and floaters, probably the most common one that we would deal with, alongside red eye. Also, the GPs can refer, pharmacists can refer, so other health practitioners can refer if they have any concerns about a patient. But also there's an extra layer to it as well, that we're able to see patients at higher risk of eye health problems. Certain ethnicities would be covered in that. And then also patients who would suffer more with a visual loss. For example, a patient with vision only in one eye, or a patient that is hard of hearing, or a deaf patient. They also are eligible to have enhanced eye services as well.
So it does sound great. So luckily, Ruth's daughter's problem was actually easily resolved by seeing an optometrist. But what if a patient's problem needs an ongoing review, or perhaps needs referral onto secondary care? What would happen then?
Well, the WECS service does offer three different levels. So we've got a band one, which would deal with the acute eye problems. If there's something that requires secondary referral, then the optometrist will cover that. We've got a band two that would allow the optometrist to be funded for further examinations. For example, a patient that might have suspect macular changes, macular problems, you'd be able to do a dilation for that. Or a young patient that might need a cycloplegic refraction. Again, the examination would be covered for that as well. It's to try and keep the patients within primary care and to not require onward referral, that we can actually do enhanced examinations within the primary care setting. And then we've also got a band three as well. So band three would allow us to be covered for a follow-up review of a patient once they've had a band one examination. For example, a red eye, we might want to review in a week. Or if you've removed a foreign body and you want to review that, again, a band three examination would cover you to do a follow-up. Also, a band three would look after in-community, low-risk post-cataract surgery patients as well.
Yes, it avoids the patient having to go to hospital as well, which can be quite an event for patients. And hospitals are currently overloaded anyway. So it's good from the NHS point of view as well. How does this service join up with other parts of primary care? So having seen a patient under this kind of service, would you need to inform the GP, for example?
Yeah, a lot of the Welsh Child Care system is designed to make primary care work together really well. So practitioners can refer into it. So GPs and pharmacies fairly commonly use that. Once you've seen a patient under this system, you have to write a report back to the GP. So then the loop is completed. They are informed of the outcome of the examination. So it's primary care really working together the best that we possibly can be.
Are there any challenges that you faced in running WEC services?
I would say one of the biggest challenges, particularly through COVID, is managing emergency appointments. When your clinic is full and you get a WEC appointment phoning in, it has been difficult at times to fit patients in. So obviously our obligation is to be able to see these patients, emergency patients, within 24 hours. And they have to take priority over routine site tests. So sometimes it's moving patients around. Other times it's phoning around other optometrists to see if somebody else would be able to fit that patient in. So that does bring challenges. But we all agree that that is our responsibility. When you become a WEC accredited optometrist, you take on that responsibility of looking after our patients.
And just lastly, what do you think are the highlights for you for being part of this service?
I know there are people that their sight has been saved because of it. One example of that, I had a patient phone up with very sudden onset of a lot of floaters based on the triage I did over the phone. My gut feeling was that he'd had a retinal detachment. He came in, had a WEC appointment. I got him straight up to the hospital. He had surgery within 24 hours. And I know that his sight's been saved through that. And being able to offer a service like that, that's what it's all about, isn't it?
That's fantastic. Thank you very much, Claire.
You're very welcome.
You're listening to Sound Optometry with me, Michelle Hanratty. Every month, we'll be exploring the topics that matter the most to us optometrists, and that's where we want to hear from you. If there's a topic you want us to cover or have a fascinating case you want to share, email us at podcast@docket.info or tweet at Sound Optometry. Next, let's turn to England. For a personal insight into providing enhanced optometry services in the largest of the four nations, I'm joined by Kevin Liu. Kevin is the optometrist director at Specsavers in Altrincham, Sale and Urmston in Greater Manchester. Welcome, Kevin.
Hi, Michelle.
Kev, Manchester has been at the forefront of embracing enhanced eye care services. Which ones do you provide in your practices?
Well, we've started providing a lot more services recently. It's all come through COVID, really. In the past, Trafford, which is my area, didn't really have too many services apart from direct cataract, but it's a shame for COVID to be the triggering factor of lots of schemes becoming available. But that's how it's happened. And we've now got glaucoma schemes for referral refinement and glaucoma monitoring. But the one with the biggest impact is Q's.
Yeah. So for those listeners who aren't practicing in England, they may not be aware MEC stands for Minor Eye Condition Service and Q stands for COVID Urgent Eye Care Service. So there have been services available around the country, such as MECs, but the COVID pandemic really was the catalyst, wasn't it?
Absolutely. So we didn't have a MECs contract before we got our Q's contract. And so when people were phoning up with acute eye care services, we were having to do that privately. Once Q's was commissioned, it really opened a gateway for people to access services in community and obviously take the burden off the eye hospital and GP practices in the main lockdown.
So how do these appointments differ from the ordinary eye examination?
So these are acute care appointments. So patients ring up and they're triaged. And then when we see those patients, we're doing a consultation based on those acute symptoms. So for lots of these patients, because it's an eye health condition, we're not necessarily doing refractions and doing the clinical tests that you would normally associate with an eye examination. We're really looking at the things that are possibly causing the symptoms of that acute eye condition.
Can you explain perhaps some of the situations that you find yourself in when you're having to provide these services?
Yeah, so I suppose the most common things that we see are patients with styes and hordeolums, dry eye symptoms, red eyes, flashes and floaters, things like that, which lots of people will associate with your typical MECs services. The added value that MyQ service has in my area is they've tagged on OCT to that. So where people have had sudden loss of vision as well, we are asked to do an OCT scan so that we can pick up macular degeneration or even BRVOs, CRVOs and things like that. And then the other enhancement in our area is the combination with IP practitioners. So if you have acute practice where they have an IP practitioner, patients would be directed to those individuals so that they can actually prescribe medication and avoid sending patients to the eye hospital.
So that sounds really helpful as far as the patient's concerned, because normally they would go to the GP for things like styes and so on. And of course, even GPs are under pressure at the moment, aren't they? Because many patients do anecdotally tell us that they can't get to see their GP very easily. So can you think of a case that stands out in particular where a patient has really benefited from the Q service?
I'm sure all the optometrists out there have got similar stories of these in lockdown. I suppose the one that stands out for me is my first iritis management. I think the first time you see something, it will always stand with a clinician. And this was a patient who I triaged over the phone. It sounded like she had recurrent iritis. I was actually in a different practice 4 miles down the road. So I timed it so that she could get into the Urmson practice as it was for, I suppose, half an hour before the end of the day. And I got in the car and drove across to examine her. And it did turn out to be an iritis. Now, at the time, it was still very early days with Qs. So we hadn't really started prescribing, even though I was IP qualified. And so I didn't have an FP10 pad at the time. I suppose looking back on it, I could have written a private prescription, but it was the first time I really worked in collaboration with a GP and the GP prescribed the medication based on my recommendation so that it saved that patient a trip to the eye hospital.
So this patient, you triaged the patient. How did she find your service? Was it one of your own patients already of the practice, or was she signposted to your practice by another professional?
She was one of our own patients, actually. She didn't know about the prescribing service of the Q service at the time. So she was pleased when she realised, because I think prior to that, she had always gone to the eye hospital to get her medication to treat her iritis. I think in general, patients find it very accessible because we're in community. They come to us for their eye examination. So it's a familiar place. And having an appointment-based system is pretty special when, you know, people are used to turning up at eye hospitals and having to wait indefinitely sometimes when there's lots of emergencies going on.
How do the services in England link up where you've got primary care and hospital eye services working alongside each other? How do they connect?
So talking about my area, we've got a really close relationship with Manchester Royal Eye Hospital, and actually Helen Wilson, who helped to set up the Q service, has been really helpful in helping me and the other IP practitioners in my practice and certainly develop our skill set so that we can help more and more individuals and we can become more experienced ourselves. And that feedback loop is essential, because I think over the last 20 months since I started doing Qs, I've learned an incredible amount, you know, and I'm 16 years qualified, yet I feel my learning curve in the last 20 months has been huge in learning how to deal with some of these acute eye conditions. But I think there's a real synergy that we could get working with the eye hospital. And there are lots of things that we can see in community. Every time I see a patient in a acute setting, I'm hoping that that helps the eye hospital to see the patients that need their care.
How can optometrists sign up to offer these services? Because obviously optometrists want to be remunerated for these services.
So I think to sign up to Qs, you do the WOPEC level training as core training. And then I think it depends on your area, really. So in my area, there are two tiers of Qs. There's the standard level of Qs and then an enhanced level. That enhanced level includes OCT or independent prescribing. So we see that as good remuneration and using our skills. I think for people wanting to get involved, it's obviously signing up to that enhanced scheme and going through all the administration, but getting the qualifications as well. Now, the qualifications, they're easily accessible. You don't need higher qualifications from the college. Having said that, doing the IP has allowed me a greater involvement in our queue service. And I think the wider set of enhanced services that are available, where it does rely on some of those higher qualifications, I believe that if, as a workforce, we get skilled up, it puts us in a better position to get those commission services. And I did my higher qualifications before my area had any real enhanced services, hoping that things would turn on, and, you know.
And they did.
Yeah, they did, you know. So we're doing glaucoma monitoring, we're doing enhanced glaucoma referrals. I'm getting to use my independent prescribing, which is fantastic.
You've touched on the fact that it does work differently in different parts of the country. So you've talked about what's going on in Manchester. But I suppose what optometrists really need to do, if they really are keen to be able to offer these services, their first port of call probably is their local optical committee, isn't it? Because they will have information about which area is signed up to do which particular services with their local CCGs. So I think that would probably be a good place to start.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Kevin, what do you feel the future will look like for enhanced optometry services in England? For example, we've called QEES because it stands for COVID Urgent Eye Care Service. So what's going to happen when we're not in a pandemic anymore?
I think even outside of a pandemic, those acute eye care services are still going to be needed. And the demand on the eye hospital, for instance, it's not going to go away, is it? So, you know, I think working alongside secondary care is very important for longevity, because everyone's stretched. And at the minute, you know, we're still in COVID and everyone's incredibly busy, you know, trying to deal with the backlog of appointments that were cancelled through the lockdowns and things. And I'd like to think that we've built some bridges where we can really work together, ultimately for the best care of the patients in the community.
I think QEES may have to be renamed into use, but I think it is here to stay.
Hopefully, and that's what I've heard, is that urgent eye care services is hopefully here to stay.
Yes. So Kevin, just finally, what's your take-home message for optometrists that aren't involved in these services yet, but want to be involved?
You mentioned earlier, talk to the LOC and understand what schemes are in the pipeline, what qualifications do they need to do. It doesn't always need to be a higher qualification, but it doesn't do any harm to have that upskilled workforce to be ready, so that we can talk to commissioners and say, we're good to go. Why don't you start using the skill set of optometrists in the community? And I think just to be really proactive and look to do as much as you can. For me, the enhanced services adds a huge variety to my day. And I know that in optics, eye examinations and those retail aspects are bread and butter, but equally, the skill set of optometrists is so much wider these days, and we should really be employing those on a much bigger scale. Certainly in my practices, we've changed the way we do things. So I now have an optometrist fully dedicated to QEES to cover three practices on a daily basis. And so every triage that comes into the practices speaks to that QEES optometrist, and we deflect things to sight tests or to the eye hospital if it's not suitable for QEES, or where we can, we see them same day. And that's not always easy, you know, with clinic diaries full. But what we found is where we've really been able to get people in and help them, it's been really appreciated by patients who feel that where they're unable to get services elsewhere, they're delighted that they can get a face-to-face appointment.
Yes, I think people in your area are very lucky to have your practices on their doorstep. Kevin, thank you very much.
Thank you, Michelle.
If you would like more information about enhanced optometry services in England and Wales, go to our website, docket.info, and search for Sound Optometry, where you'll find the additional reading materials. By listening to this podcast and completing the short exercise on the website, you can gain one CPD point covering the GOC domains of professionalism, clinical practice, and independent prescribing. We will be continuing this theme next month, where we'll explore the enhanced services in Scotland and Northern Ireland. Until then, we'd really appreciate it if you help spread the word about the podcast. Tell your colleagues to listen or subscribe to the series so you don't miss an episode. The producers are Jason Hoskin and Dr. Hilary Guite. I'm Michelle Henratty. Thanks for listening.